We recognize that we must know something about everything, or are expected to know something about everything, and that is a daunting task when we're already at war on a global scale.
We are introducing counterterrorism training on a national level. Provide specialized counterterrorism training to 224 agents.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Tuesday, February the 11th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Organizers of the massive anti-war rally planned for New York City this weekend are continuing their court battle to get a permit to march. Peace advocates are mobilizing in over 304 cities around the world for a massive demonstration against a U.S.-led attack on the people of Iraq. United for Peace and Justice, the organizers of the New York City demonstration, are fighting for a permit to march in front of the United Nations, where a decision will be made over the next week or so whether to authorize war. The majority of the U.N. Security Council members are opposed to military action, and three key members of the council have threatened to use their veto power to prevent a U.S. resolution declaring war. The former Archbishop of South Africa, Bishop Desmond Tutu, a slated speaker at Saturday's protest, says the tactics sound all too familiar.
I am quite shocked to hear that the city of New York could take this kind of action. I can't really believe it is true, because it makes me think back to the awful days when we were struggling against apartheid in South Africa, and we used to have states of emergency where even to hold a funeral, we needed the permission of the police. I really cannot believe that the major city in the leading democracy in the world and refuse people particular right. It would probably be the only city in the world on February the 15th which will not be permitting its citizens and others to express their right to a different point of view. I suppose we have to believe that if the march was of those who were supporting the position of the Bush administration, the city council would obviously behave in the same way, express their concern about security in the same way. I hope that good sense may still prevail, and that the mayor and the council will reconsider the decision they have taken and grant the citizens the right to express their views freely.
Former Archbishop of South Africa Desmond Tutu calling from Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks to Democracy Now! For that segment. Yesterday, U.S. District Court Judge Barbara Jones upheld a lower court ruling denying the group a permit to march. The judge cited heightened security concerns as a reason for refusing the permit. She asserted that the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right to protest but not to march. Bob Wing of the United for Peace and Justice organization, the coalition organizing for this mass demonstration, spoke with Peace Watch this morning about the judge's ruling.
People need to know that New York City has been under orange alert since September 11th. There is not an additional heightened security in New York City. And in addition, there have been large mass rallies around the country, anti-war rallies in the last few months, and there hasn't been a single incident at any of these large rallies. So we think that her decision is extremely ill-considered. We really consider it an attempt to thwart and silence the anti-war movement. There are many different forms of freedom, ways to exercise your freedom of speech. A rally is one of them, a march is one of them, and everybody knows who has any knowledge about large rallies as they always include a march. And in fact, that the vast majority of people like to come to march because that's the funnest part of these things. And especially when it's winter, it's a very important part of keeping up the energy. And really, when you have that many people, you can't just go crouch down someplace. Mm-hmm. You know, you really have to be able to move around. And so, and for that matter, it also raises issues about, you know, just people coming to the rally. Let's say we just did have a rally. Mm-hmm. There's going to be tens of thousands or possibly hundreds of thousands of people.
How many are you really expecting?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, I never like to make predictions. Certainly it's going to be tens of thousands. It could be hundreds of thousands. So then there are a lot of factors you can't account for, like, you know, what happens in the world? What does Bush do, or what happens in Europe or Korea or Iraq between now and then?
Mm-hmm.
The weather on that day could be a big factor, if it's extremely cold or if the place is really iced in. And whether or not we get a permit for the march might have some influence. In addition, we're worried about not just whether we get a permit for the march, but we're worried about secondary decisions. I'm making sure that the subway stations are kept open, you know, that people can walk from wherever they are to the rally sites. But we're expecting an extremely large rally.
Are there any of those other details that you just mentioned, specifically with regard to the modes of transportation, are those still left hanging at this point?
Well, right now, no one has told us that they're going to clog anything up. So, and we're in negotiations, or trying to be in negotiations more accurately, to make sure everything is as positive as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, Judge Barbara Jones, did she offer any explanation as to why she felt that, you know, that having this many people would raise heightened security concerns?
Well, she didn't offer anything really specific. I mean, naturally, you know, when there are a lot of people getting from one place to the next, obviously that raises general issues of public safety.
But have there not been large?
Exactly.
Yes,
that's my point.
Past.
There have been very large, even in the last few months, tremendously large rallies, 250 to 300,000 in Washington, 150 to 200,000 in San Francisco. And they've had large marches in New York many times in the past without incident.
Well, there have been reports circulating attempting to paint the burgeoning peace movement in this country as anti-American and as tools of Saddam Hussein and as a mechanism aiding and abetting terrorism. It sort of harkens back to the days of McCarthyism in a way.
It very much does. And in fact, in my opinion, they have put into place, you know, the harshest restrictions on civil liberties and democracy, the harshest terms for immigration since the McCarthy period. And, you know, every time there starts to be a progressive movement for peace or justice, racial justice in this country, the powers that be throw up obstacles. They charge you with being terrorist. They charge you with being communist. They charge you with being anti-American. And they pass laws and they take measures to try to thwart you. They put the FBI on people like Martin Luther King, who then 20 years later they act like they were on their side, but at the time they were considered great threats and tracked down by the FBI and harassed and given death threats, etc. That happened throughout the 60s, starting in the early 60s with the so-called safe civil rights movement. We have to remember that even that was repressed. Then, of course, as it got more radical, the repression even got worse with groups like the Black Panther Party or the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee or the League of Revolutionary Black Workers in Detroit or the Chicano Moratorium Movement, or the American Indian Movement. As things got more radical, there was even more laws passed and more charges made and more attempts to block and harass and even kill and jail many people.
Mm. So, Bob Wing, what is the next step for United for Peace and Justice?
Well, the next step right now is we have filed an appeal, and we don't know yet whether the hearing will be later today or tomorrow, probably tomorrow. If the hearing is tomorrow, there will be a decision rendered the next day. And if we get a negative decision, we will appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. If we get a positive decision, we have to see whether or not the other side appeals to the Supreme Court. But there is one more appeal available. The most important message we want to give right now is we are going to be there en masse, and we want everybody to join us on Saturday at noon at 49th Street and 1st Avenue. We want to make it clear to everyone that we do have legal permits for a rally there. And at the barest minimum, we are going to have a big rally, a gigantic rally on that day. And people need to know that this is definitely, by far, the largest internationally coordinated day of protest against war in history. There's going to be at least 5 million people on the streets that day.
Bob Wing of United for Peace and Justice. Last night, Pentagon officials were invited to a town hall meeting in Arlington, Virginia by U.S. Congressman James Moran. It was the first occasion during which Pentagon officials have attended a town hall meeting about the impending war against Iraq. Most of the 400 people in attendance had tough questions for the congressional and military representatives present. Ingrid Drake from WBIX.org, Refugees and Exiles Radio Network, was there and has this report.
Congressman Moran, who voted against extending war powers to Bush, stated that 69% of the calls he has received from constituents do not think the Bush administration has made a case to go to war with Iraq. Moran tried to briefly explain the roots of the conflict.
We have a particular problem in the Middle East, and it dates back really to after World War I, but throughout the 20th century, colonial powers have carved what in effect were artificial boundaries. The Western civilization empire, if you will, was concerned about the power of the Eastern Empire, the Ottoman Empire. It really dates back to that, and found people to their liking, most of them warlords, many nomadic, and you've probably seen the movie about Lawrence of Arabia. Well, this is very much what it was about. And so artificial boundaries were created in countries that the Western powers felt would be generally sympathetic. The Iraq is a case in point. They're artificial boundaries. But throughout the 20th century, since we have become very dependent upon fossil fuels, and Saudi Arabia is a principal source of oil and gas, as is Iraq, they have become important to us from an economic standpoint. And both Democratic and Republican administrations have had an interest in keeping leadership throughout the Middle East that was receptive and willing to work with us. And frankly, with our oil companies as well, in the case of Saudi Arabia and others.
Congressman Moran was joined by Victoria Clark, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, whose answers were considered condescending and were followed by jeers from the crowd.
There are huge advantages to being the United States. There are disadvantages as well. And it's so easy to take a shot at the last remaining superpower. But one of the things I always like to think about is, if people around the world view the country, as you said, with hilarity, was that your word? If so many people view the United States with hilarity, and I disagree firmly, I don't think they do, then why do thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people every day, every month, try to get into this country?
Also present was Major General Kevin Cooklook, Marine Corps Assistant Deputy Commandant for Plans, Policies, and Operations. Cooklook spoke mostly of his experience in the military and the need to support U.S. troops.
The essence of the American way of life is community, and community meeting, just like we have here tonight. And what these young men and women, these volunteers, really want from their community is just that people know they're out there, that they appreciate what they're doing, that even though they may not agree with everything that's going on, that they never lose sight of the importance of what this republic has brought to each and every one of us this past 227 years. So all they ask is a thank you, or a remembrance, or a card, or a message, nothing important. And I would say the same thing to you. I want to thank you very much for your attendance here tonight, and I look forward to hearing the dialogue as it develops.
Many in the audience were critical of the responses from the Pentagon officials, including several veterans.
Words are pretty easy, and I appreciate your comment about thanking veterans for their service. But words are easy. I'm a Vietnam veteran. And there are a lot of you in this room who remember what happened when we came back from that war. I served 30 years ago last week. I was in the middle of War Zone C as a civilian. That was after two tours as an army advisor in Vietnam. And we were left there with three civilians as the 3rd Brigade of the 1st Cavalry Division, the last U.S. troops in Vietnam, flew off into the sunset. We were left there, and the next morning, of course, Tay Ninh, where I was to be the southern capital of the National Liberation Front. And we woke up with half a North Vietnamese division south of the city. So I know And I won't use your word imminent threat. I'll use the word clear and present danger. I know what clear and present danger is. I still have a problem with what clear and present danger is in relation to Iraq and how this administration has. My other concern is about the fact that this country seems to be want to be the embodiment, or feels that we are the embodiment of everything that is good in the world. I lived in Indonesia, the largest and most populous Muslim country in the world, for 6.5 years. I've served overseas a long time. I was in Angola last summer. I was in Sierra Leone, where they have either the short sleeve cut on the arms of little boys, or the long sleeve. So it's a cruel world. And war is hell. And the thing that really bothers me now is that the generals that I hear that lived, and I know there aren't many in our army, that lived in the Middle East, that speak Arabic, that have an appreciation for, that really know the ground. Schwarzkopf is one. He's hesitant. Wesley Clark is hesitant. Anthony Zinni is hesitant. And yet we are driven by an administration of a president, and you know, General, you served in the reserves. George Bush did not complete his reserve commitment. Driven by men who never served. Cheney never served. Wolfowitz, a hawk to the nth degree, never served. Daniel Pearl, once a good Democrat, he worked for Stuart Jackson. Never served. This really bothers me.
The audience was made up of a diverse group of people, including several people from the Arab world who raise issues not often addressed by the Pentagon. We start with a Kurdish woman who made a strong case against going to war with Iraq.
Saddam Hussein chemically bombed my Kurdish brothers and sisters. I am a Kurd, and I am against the war in Iraq. Woman, a mother, and I know United Nations report in October about women, peace, and war reported in every country where there has been war. The women have been raped. The women and their children have become refugees. And even when the aid organizations go to those countries, read about it, it's on the United Nations website. The AIDS organizations are headed by men who ask if they can sleep with your daughter before they give you money. Read, it's on the website of the United Nations. When there is war, the women are raped. Our children go hungry.
Thank you,
ma'am. Our children are Nepal. Our children have cancer. Our children don't have medicine. I am a mother, and I am against the war.
Thank you for sharing your views.
In this country, there's a huge peace movement, I have been to probably every rally that's been in this area. There are good people that are against this war. This is not a minority of the people in this country. This is a sincere and passionate and emotional and a scared country. And I think you guys are adding to this fright every day that we see this. I'm really happy you're here for one reason, two reasons. Not to hear your spiel. Because I heard that. But you're going to listen to our spiel. Because every time I've been writing letters to Mr. Moran, writing letters to other senators, it doesn't seem that anybody in this administration is listening to anybody's. Mr. Moran had the courtesy to write me back. And my Senator Allen told me it's good to be a public citizen. Please try to answer this. I'm just a citizen. I represent my family, my wife. Other common people in this community. I want to ask you, Ms. Clark, with all these facts we've heard tonight, I consider them facts. Iraq's neighbors don't want a war. Diplomacy seems to be working. We've surrounded these guys for 12 years. Major, we've got everybody in the whole army over in Iraq now. What in the world is this threat that Saddam Hussein poses? Diplomacy seems to be working. The UN, the body of the world that's constituted to work things out peacefully. This is the new millennium. New millennium has not supported this war. This is a third-rate country 6,000 miles away. You're telling us it's a threat to us. Bullshit.
I don't know whether we're still on prime time or maybe on Fox.
Stick around to the end. I will give you my card, and you send a letter to me. People who work in the government, people who are in the public sector, should listen to people, which we do, and should respond. It may not be an answer you want, but we do owe you answers, so if you send it to me, I will make sure we address it.
I was in the Gulf in Saudi Arabia 12 years ago. I was also
in the military?
Yes. Also, as a deployed reservist, I was fighting the war on terrorism last year, helping find and kill Al-Qaeda and Taliban terrorists. But in these conflicts, always there's national security imperative. And always these things make military sense, and they also make political sense. I think, as we know, as regardless of the changes that we feel 9/11 took in the way of national security strategy, I think it still holds what Clausewitz proposed more than 100 years ago. And that is that military usage is only an extension of politics. You need smart politics to have a war that means anything. Rolling over a country in 2 to 4 weeks, the tanks going to Baghdad, we've won. Okay, what's next? What are the politics? How do we build a nation when we are going to be preoccupied with the force protection of our own troops?
The crowd at the town hall meeting spilled out of the school auditorium and into the hallway and cafeteria. As the meeting ended, it was clear that many in the audience did not feel that all of their concerns had been addressed. Thanks to Matt Bradley and Robin Bell of DC Indie Media for help on this report. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Ingrid Drake.
Mother of us all, place of our birth. We all are witness to the rape of the world. You've seen her stripped.
The world. The Bush administration and the United Kingdom continue to send troops to the region around Iraq. Inside Baghdad, preparations are underway for the impending military assault. Peace Watch correspondent Jeremy Scahill is in Baghdad, where he gave us an update on war readiness plans, as perhaps through the eyes of the Iraqi people.
Well, I think that on the diplomatic front, they basically are giving up, and I think that they are now sort of resigning themselves to the fact that they're going to be in the position of defending against a massive attack by the world's only superpower. And so instead of focusing their attention on trying to avert a war, which I think they are beginning to realize is futile, they are focusing their attention on hosting very big military parades, on distributing guns to the population, on doing civilian militia training. This at a time when civilians themselves are preparing by stocking up canned goods and water, digging wells, wealthier families buying generators. I think there's almost no one in this country right now who believes that war can be averted. And so I think the Iraqis are dedicating their time to really trying to prepare to defend the country against an attack. I mean, when the U.S. is threatening to hit them with 3,000 missiles in the opening hours, I don't think they have much time to spend on anything other than figuring out how they might even, in a minuscule way, try to deal with this.
What's the mood like there, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, it's people are moving into panic mode. You know, people know what's coming down the pipeline. I mean, even though you don't have media here that tells people what's going on, they don't have access to even Al Jazeera inside of Iraq unless people have pirate satellites. You know, so, you know, information is not readily available via the media, but word spreads very quickly on the streets. And while, you know, some semblance of ordinary life continues and the streets remain congested and the wedding parties are going on because it's Thursday here right now, underneath it all, you are really sensing that panic is starting to spread, and not just in Baghdad, but in other areas around the country. In the south of Iraq, people are very, very afraid that the attack could spark a large-scale civil war. And I think that that is the worst fear of many Iraqis, is that on top of being bombed, they could run the risk of having a civil war that would have many dimensions, religious, ethnic, communal, tribal, as well as Ba'ath Party versus non-Ba'ath Party. So the country is very much on edge, but, and I think that people believe that after the pilgrimage, the Hajj, is over on the 15th of February, that at any moment the U.S. could decide to attack Iraq. Mm.
Jeremy, we know that there are a number of American citizens that have been in Baghdad from time to time, members of Voices of the Wilderness, other human rights and humanitarian organizations. Are those individuals still there in large numbers, or have they decided to make an exit? To leave the country.
Yeah, in fact, a large group of about 15 or 20 more Americans arrived today. Medea Benjamin, who is the head of Global Exchanges here, with a group of women calling themselves Code Pink. They yesterday were at an oil refinery donating blood outside of the oil refinery under the slogan, No Blood for Oil. You know, you have delegations coming in from all around Europe. There are many, many groups of people here, but in reality, it doesn't add up to a huge presence of people. The kind of people who come into situations like this when war appears to be on the horizon are people who are, I think, quite clearly willing to take a very severe risk of being wounded or bombed or worse. So, you know, there is a small but dedicated group of people, including Voices in the Wilderness, the Iraq Peace Team, and others, who are here and are going to remain here. But it is now getting down to the point where the people that are coming in here are basically realizing that they could well be here through an extremely bloody bombing.
And, Jeremy, are you taking precautions for yourself?
Well, you know, it's on a personal note, Vern, I have to say it's hard. You know, I'm with the two other journalists, and the three of us are sort of traveling around together. And we're having a debate right now on which side of the Tigris River that we want to be on. Right now we're staying in a hotel that is on the opposite side of the river from the International Press Center. We're afraid that if they bomb the bridges, we're going to be cut off from all means of communication. We're beginning to stockpile goods, including bottled water and other things. You know, we as people, and I think this is true of many of the journalists who are here too, are personally very nervous about this, and one of the scariest scenarios could be a civil war. And it's not out of the question that American citizens or other Westerners would be targeted in it. And so, you know, these are discussions that are happening constantly throughout the day among journalists here and among some of the activists that have come in. You know, it's very difficult to prepare. It's difficult for us to prepare, and we're observers, so one can imagine how much of a panic is going through the homes of Iraqis across this country.
Jeremy Scahill, you be safe and be well, and we thank you very much for your time and for your very unique perspective around this important and critical matter.
Thank you, Verna.
Peace Watch correspondent Jeremy Scahill speaking with us last Thursday from Baghdad. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.